Well, welcome to the Coventry Telegraph podcast, While We Sing Together, another bumper edition. My name is Andy Turner, and I'm joined by George Baker, who's not only an avid Sky Blues fan, and has been for most of his life, but he's also studying journalism at Southampton Solent University. So welcome, George.
Thank you.
So tell me, George, first of all, why do you want to be a journalist, and why on earth do you support the Sky Blues when there could be any other number of successful football clubs out there to follow?
So first I want to get into journalism because obviously I have a passion for sport, mainly football, and I just thought, whilst I'm probably not going to have a career actually playing the sport, it'd be a good idea to be talking or writing about it, and I've been doing it at uni now for a year and thoroughly enjoying it. At the minute I'm focusing on the writing side of things, but we're doing TV and radio, so I'm going to look into that, and perhaps I'll have a change of plan over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and so why the Sky Blues then? Why do you follow them?
Well, my dad really, he took me up when I was about 6 years old. I think it was a game against Birmingham. At first I didn't really have much of an interest, but then after the Euros of that year, I got into it, and it was the last season at Highfield Road. And I just thought I'd much rather support a team I can watch week in, week out, and have a bit more of a bond than supporting your Man United's, your Chelsea's. But now I'm sort of regretting that decision. I wish I was glory hunting.
It's a familiar tale, isn't it? I mean, that's how I started myself, going up to Highfield Road with my dad, and taking a stool to stand on, you know, as a 5-6 year old and all that sort of stuff, and it just gets you, doesn't it? It's in the family, it's in the blood. I've got two lads myself, got a daughter as well, and they've all been as well, and you know, you start them on that path, and
you know, can't get out.
Well, exactly, and you know, and I think I like the fact that you support your local club. You know, I think that's the way it should be. You know, I get the fact that other kids, local kids, support Man United, Everton, or whoever, you know, Man City's of the world. But, you know, I think it's important to follow your local side, you know, through thin and thinner, unfortunately, where the Sky Blues are concerned. But anyway, on an upbeat note, I've been away on holiday, and I've come back, and in the last three games I've seen, starting with Chesterfield, there's been an upturn in fortunes. So they've gone from 10th to 4th. In that time, so you know, happy days. And the one thing that struck me, George, is that it's a real division of real fine lines, because you know, looking at that, I mean, it's quite easy to get sort of carried away, you know, up to fourth and get all excited about it. But you know, I think we need a sort of bit of a reality check, really, because you know, if you go through each and every game of the season so far, they could quite conceivably have gone either way. You know, and I think that's the thing about football, and I think that's why, you know, managers often sort of say they don't get too excited when they're winning, and they don't get too down when they're losing, you know, unless obviously you're on a downward spiral. But you know, even going back to the opening game against Notts County, you know, they hit the post early doors, and you're thinking, well, if that goes in, it could be a completely different game, you know. And the 3-0 scoreline, I'm sort of flatter them a little bit in the end, because you know, those the two late goals, they got a goal, they got the first goal, but the other two goals didn't come till very late in the game, did they?
I mean, like you said, it was a game of fine margins, and I think I saw on Twitter someone say if they'd have had Jody Jones, I think they probably would have won the game, because apart from him, I didn't see a breakthrough from either side. So.
Yeah, that's right. And then you know, you look at the Grimsby game, which is the following game, and McNulty had a bit of luck for his goal, didn't he? On another day, the man in the middle, the referee would have disallowed that. And then you look at Newport County, which you were at, I missed because I was away. But you know, you tell me that City absolutely dominated the game, and they won by the odd goal.
Yeah, the goal was a complete freak. Any other day, saving that. But as I said, Tony Andrew came on and could have scored two in the first few minutes he was on the pitch, and they never really looked like scoring, and even when they took that shot, they didn't look like scoring, but there you go.
And then the Yeovil game, Yeovil away, you know, I've read, you know, a couple of penalty appeals went which they didn't get, you know. So, you know, another game, you know, and a mistake by the goalkeeper.
And if we don't concede that mistake and we're not pushing for the equaliser, they're not going to score the second either, so...
Yeah. And then the Chesterfield game, which was again my first game back from my break, City had a goal disallowed. It was a goalless draw, but both keepers made wonder saves, didn't they? It could have gone either way. It really was sort of finely balanced, really. And then you look at Port Vale last Saturday, and City were sort of defending this sort of slender lead, weren't they? You know, and absolutely hanging on for grim death at the
end. Masterclass from Lee Bird at the end kept us in it.
He was absolutely superb, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll talk about clean sheets in a little while, but you know, I think he's really come to the fore since he's been back, and not really put a foot wrong, has he? And
no, I've been really impressed with him.
Yeah, and long may that continue. It was quite funny actually, because Mark Robinson called him Go-Go Gadget.
Oh, I saw that.
This week, because of his extended arms and all that sort of stuff. But then, and then, you know, bring us right back up to date, and Carlisle on Tuesday night. You know, dreadful first half, wasn't it?
Oh, it was terrible, wasn't it? No.
And, you know, you thought, oh, it's going to be an absolutely miserable rest of the game. And yet, second half, you know... Completely different side. You know, got that early goal, which gave him lots of confidence. But, you know, and got the two goals to see the game out. But even then, there were two late chances from their centre-half. I think it was Tom Parks who...
Yeah.
He thumped the crossbar.
The crossbar. And then it over as well.
That's right, from a late corner. I think that was in stoppage time, wasn't it?
So, something like that.
So that could have been 2-2, you know.
And
in
then
the end.
There's the chance in the first half from Jamie Devitt, who, if that had gone in, it's lost the game, haven't we?
Yeah, so. And again, you know, we mentioned Lee Birch, a brilliant one-handed save, wasn't it, to his left, to deny that. So, but the thing that really excited me, about the Carlisle game, was that they just got that sort of bit of va-va-voom back, you know, that sort of, you know, in the second half, you know, they got forward with, you know, waves of attacks, and I guess that hopefully that's a taste of things to come, isn't it?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, there was chances for most players on the pitch there. I think Biamu came on, did really well, had a few chances. Vincenti looked really dangerous. Jones was taking plenty of shots at the end as well. I think if you can keep that up, the goals are going to start coming, especially when McNulty's back fit again and the team's starting to gel now by the looks of things, too.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jones, I mean, the thing that struck me about the first half against Carlisle was that he was, like he has been in a lot of games this season, and quite rightly so, because he's a Coventry's a sort of obvious threat and danger man. But Carlisle were doubling up on him, weren't they, in the first half, and yet he had so much more freedom in the second. Now, I wonder whether, particularly on the right hand side, where Jack Grimmer got forward really well, didn't he? Yeah. And we're really impressed with him.
Yeah, definitely.
And hopefully, I mean, that'll sort of, you know, create more space for Jody to sort of get at his fullback.
Yes.
And he had a lot more joy, didn't he, Jones, after that. But the other positive thing, I think the big positive thing, is that the goals are now being shared around. So Peter Vincenti got his first goal, Duncan's Nazon also opened his account. So that's really good, and you know, it's a really important time. It's vital now that players like that step up,
because we can't be relying on Jones, especially with Andrea out now for 9 months. Who's probably a creative threat. If him and Jones are out of the team and we're relying on either of them two, then we're going to be struggling. But if the likes of, like I say, Nazon and Vincenti and Grimmer scored as well, and people like that, if they can step up, then that's what we're going to need, because Portsmouth went up last year and I don't think their top scorer had any more than 15 goals.
Right.
It was spread out really evenly, so I think that's what we need, and with the amount of strikers we've got too, I think that's what's going to have to be done.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, Mark Robbins confirmed his worst fears in the week, that Tony Andreu is out for the season with a cruciate knee ligament tear. And that is real kick in the tate, isn't it? Because, you know, I mean, he was seen, although he hadn't really sort of got going, he'd shown glimpses and enough to know that, you know, he could be a real creative force this season, sort of playing in that sort of hole, that number 10 role, couldn't he?
But I haven't seen too much of him play, but from what I had seen, he's got that class about him, and his record, especially in Scotland, he's scored so many goals over a couple of years there. And I think he would have added a lot to the side, and he probably would have been our most creative player that can pick that through ball and find people like Kelly did actually the other day. So he's got to need people like him and Stevenson when he's back in the fold to try and replace and what Andre would have brought to the team.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting sort of, you know, the interesting sort of dynamic between Doyle and Liam Kelly in midfield. They're sort of two holding roles, and it strikes me that they start off sort of playing very deep, and certainly Doyle does anyway. He sort of screens the back four. That's his job, really, I suppose. Although he can pass it around, spray the ball, hit diagonals to spring attacks or whatever. But I think what they do is, you know, they tend to sort of, you know, play this sort of cautious approach at the start of games, and then as the game goes on, certainly in the second half, then Kelly sort of takes on a more sort of advancing role. And as we saw the other night, you know, that through ball for Nason to score, I mean, was superb, wasn't it?
And perfect.
Yeah, and so he's really got to, we've got to start relying on him, I guess, to sort of step up and start doing more of that creative work.
I think he's shown on Tuesday especially that he is able to do that, and he had a few chances to score himself. I think he blazed one over in the first half, and he needs to be getting forward and chipping in with a few goals. I think he did it for Leighton Orient a bit last season. But yeah, we need goals from everywhere and input from everyone. It's not just relying on a few individuals.
Yeah. Now, I suppose, you know, I was just looking through the team, and, you know, there are a few sort of natural number 10s in there. But the one lad that does sort of stand out, really, that jumps out at me, and I'm thinking, Devon Kelly-Evans. I mean, he came on Tuesday night, didn't he? And he did ever so well
in the 3-4 minutes he had on the pitch.
Yeah, but you know, he's him and his brother are like two peas in a pod, you know. I mean, identical twins, so they obviously are. but in terms of their playing style, I mean, they just give everything, don't they? They run through brick walls for the cause, and I love that. I just love that mentality. You know, they just do anything for the badge, and you know. Perhaps it's an opportunity for him now that Andreo's out. You know, certainly till January, when I'm sure the manager will sort of, if he's got anything left in his kitty, he'll try and bring somebody else in. But you know, I mean, the answer could be sort of staring him in the face, couldn't it? You know, I mean, I know he's still young now, but you know, he's had a little taste of first team football, and you know, maybe he will get introduced. You know. Sort of slowly and steadily over the next few weeks. Who knows? But I'd certainly give him a go
in the cup games and see what he's like in there when there's less pressure on it. As obviously, I think the league's our focus. But there's not just him. There's other players in the academy who can potentially step up. Because I was at the game on Monday against Sheffield United.
Yeah, the 23s.
Yeah, and is it Bilal Saoud?
Yes.
He looked very impressive. I don't know whether he would be ready for first team football, but he was certainly creating a lot, and he scored as well.
What position did he play?
I think on that day he was playing sort of central midfield, but I believe he's normally a winger.
Yeah.
Because they're very short on numbers given the shortage of injuries and things like that. But yeah, he looked impressive, and obviously, like you say, Devon Kelly Evans. And you've got Ponticelli as well, who could step in and do a job.
Yeah. But yes, because obviously Mark McNulty is also out with he's got a hamstring injury, which is, we're told, 2 to 4 weeks. He's been in the wars a bit, hasn't he, McNulty? Yes. You know, having his teeth pushed out and his cracked bone in his wrist. You know, but you know, it's funny because there's been a bit of debate about McNulty, and I like McNulty. I think he's got that work rate and energy and that movement, and I think he's got a good touch. And as he showed with chances against Chesterfield, you know, I think he worked the keeper a couple of times. Yeah. He missed a couple of chances, but he was denied by a couple of decent saves as well.
Yeah, I think the goals are going to come with him.
Yeah,
he scored the goals at wherever he's been. So I think it's just a matter of time once he's settled and he's got that understanding with whether it's Bevan or whoever. But he's definitely getting in the right positions. It's when he's not getting there that you should be worrying.
Yeah. And hopefully, I mean, you know, perhaps the positive to come out of the two injuries is that it's going to offer opportunities for other people to come in. And Max Biamu is another case in point, really, as well as Duncan Nason, who have got that chance now. I mean, I thought when Max came on in the second half, midway through the second half, I think it was on Tuesday night, I think that's the best I've seen him since pre-season. You know, I thought he looked quite good in pre-season, again, particularly against Nuneaton. But I thought he was superb, and he played a couple of clever passes. He had a shot at goal as well, didn't he?
Just volleyed the ball over just inside the area.
Yeah, but so you know, there's the opportunity for him to. Hopefully, we'll see more of him, and hopefully, he'll grasp that sort of opportunity. But the one thing I'm not speaking to the manager after the game. The one thing he sort of he said about both Max and Duncan's Nason was that. That he needs to see more work rate, and I think particularly in Bialmu's case it's been a bit of a shock to the system because he's gone from part-time football to full-time, so I think in terms of the intensity of training and matches, I think that's come as a real shock to the system.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I mean, he's like you said, part-time football in England with Sutton, which isn't a bad level, but then I don't know what the standard's like in France, but he's doing the same, so but he looks a decent option, and I'm looking forward to seeing him start and get more minutes because I've seen clips of him from Sutton last year and he looks a real handful and he was always getting a goal and things like that, so it'd be good to see him in the side at some point.
Yeah, because he offers something a little bit different, doesn't he, because he's sort of a bit more of a physical presence, isn't he, than the rest of the strikers. And the other thing he said, the manager said about Nason was the fact that he needs to work harder off the ball, which is interesting, you know, because I mean, obviously, when McNulty and Bevan play, I mean, they're chasing and you know, from the front, aren't they? They just press, the defenders at every moment. They're almost relentless, aren't they? Just don't stop, don't give them a second on the ball. So I think that's what the manager's looking from him. You know, I mean, Nason has shown, you know, that he's got great strength on the ball. You know, he can finish as well. So, you know, there's a really good player there. It's just he just needs to up those levels, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I think his goal the other night will give him a good confidence boost and hopefully set him on the way. And he's got his opportunity now, like you say, with McNulty being out as well. And I imagine he'll start this weekend as well.
Yes.
So, yeah, hopefully he can step up to the plate.
Yeah. Okay, we'll look at the back now. We've looked at the forward-thinking players, but the Sky Blues currently... boast the meanest defence in the division, having conceded just 3 goals in League 2 and kept 5 clean sheets, which is fantastic, isn't it?
No, we don't usually say that too often. It's normally
we've probably put
the most in the league.
We've probably put the kiss of death on it ahead of Cambridge. You know, it's what do you put that down to? Because we've seen a change in personality as well, haven't we, at the back, in the centre back?
Completely different defence, really, apart from Stokes. But I don't know what it's down to, really. I think it's maybe the focus is on defence this year because we've got Doyle in there as well, who have never really had that screening player for years. We had it for one season with Vince a lot, but apart from that, we've been quite weak in the midfield. So I think it's down to that as well, with Kelly as well. So we've basically effectively got a back six, and then it allows the attacking players to maybe stay up the field a bit more.
Yeah. And of course the form of the goalkeeper as well.
Yeah.
You know, we've already mentioned, you know, Birch having been outstanding, but there's an interesting selection dilemma, if we can call it that this weekend, because obviously Rob McDonald is available again after serving his one match ban against Carlisle. For his sending off, ridiculous sending off, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was. I'd have gone with a yellow myself.
Yeah, I mean, the way the lad went down and like he'd been shot, just ridiculous. I hate to see that, but anyway, that's football for you. So, Tom Davis, man of the match on Tuesday night, played really well. Now, Davis came in, I think he made his debut against Chesterfield, was brought in deadline day, wasn't he? Because basically, McDonald was struggling with a knee and hamstring injury at the time, and I think Robbins feared the worst,
couple
didn't he?
Of months.
Yeah, thought he might be out long term, so brought in another centre back quite wisely. But all of a sudden, Rod makes a miraculous recovery. Davis, he had a bit of a nervous debut, I thought, to get at Chesterfield. Gave the ball away a couple of times and all that sort of stuff, and it didn't come as any surprise to me that McDonald was restored alongside Willis for the Port Vale game.
No.
And I thought, you know, obviously Rob McDonald, I thought they'd be his sort of first choice. But seeing Tom Davies the way he played on Tuesday night against Carlisle, what do you think?
It's a tough decision because I do think McDonald and Willis is Robins's ideal pairing at the back. I think both are able to play with the ball at their feet and play out from the back, whereas Davies, I think, is a bit more awkward with the ball. And as well, McDonald's a natural left footer as compared to Davies, who is always cutting back onto his right, which could cause issues at some point.
Yeah.
But Davies has stuck a real claim to be in the side, and I think he'll be unlucky if he drops back to the bench. But personally for me, I think I'd put McDonald back in.
Yeah, I mean, only because I've seen what he can do, I sort of favour McDonald at the moment. But you know, you have to say, you know, it's going to be pretty harsh on Davies, isn't it, if he's dropped now, having played so well on Tuesday night. So, but you know, that's what managers want. You know, that's what they crave for, isn't it? They crave competition for places. You know, you've got it in virtually every position on the park. You know, not least in goal. You know, where the two goalkeepers are pushing each other. So yeah, so that'd be a really interesting one. I mean, you know, from his comments in his pre-match press conference, he sort of, Mark Robins sort of hinted that Davies, what he was bigging him up so much, I sort of read him between the lines, I sort of think that perhaps he's going to stick with him. He may just be throwing a complete curveball, of course, but either way, I mean, hopefully, it doesn't matter who plays, hopefully
they'll
be in safe hands.
It's good to have that option of Davies and Hyam as well, who's not done badly when he's played as well.
Yes, yeah, very much so.
Yeah, so we've got them options, and it's nice to have not just have a strong first team, to have a strong bench as well.
Yeah. Now, let's look at the opposition. Cambridge United at the Abbey Stadium, scene of a bit of a nightmare last year in the FA Cup, where they conceded four goals, which was just, I mean, they were ripped apart. It was almost a one-man, well, it was a two-man show, really, and Luke Berry and Uke Ikpeazu, the target man, who's still there, but fortunately for the Sky Blues, Luke Berry has moved on to Luton, I think, hasn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so he got 22 goals
from midfield as well, which is impressive.
Yeah. So, you know, and they'll fancy it, won't they? They'll certainly be up for it. I think they've kept four clean sheets in the last five. Although they lost, well, they're unbeaten in four of the last five, haven't they? But they lost to Barnet, I think it was 3-1 last week away. So they'll be sort of looking to get back on track. But, you know, with having kept four clean sheets and Coventry five, I mean, are we expecting a tight game, do you think?
I think it will be. I think even though they've struggled for goals a bit, I think they've only scored six, with Ikpeazu being the main goal threat. With our tight defence as well, and they've got quite a solid midfield. They've obviously got Gary Deegan in there. So there'll be a bit of a battle between him and Doyle. And
it's going to be a tasty one, isn't it?
It is.
Head to head, Michael Doyle and Gary Deegan. Who's your money on?
Hopefully Doyle. but yeah, so we'll have to wait and see what happens with that battle there.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be a low goal affair. I think it might be either a 0-0 or looking at someone's going to nick it at some point.
I agree. I think it's tight. I think Coventry go there in a nice bit of form, you know, picking up a bit of momentum. But as I said, going back to what we said at the start of the podcast, you know, it is fine lines, and I think again Saturday, I think it'll be a game of fine lines. Unless, you know, the Sky Blues can really sort of get their attacking game going like they did in the second half against Carlisle, you know, I really think it's going to be sort of, you know, a finely balanced game. But as you say, you know, Doyle and Deegan, I mean, it's just a sort of mouth-watering prospect, isn't it? But you know, I wonder what odds we can get on Gary Deegan being sent off.
I know, two seasons ago he was sent off.
Yes, Southend. Yeah,
because
I mean, you know, I remember that game, and I said, I don't want to sound like I've been wise after the fact, but you know, I said to the local reporter that covers Southend at the time, I said, "Oh, you watch, Deegan will get sent off today." He said, "No, he won't. I said, "He will. I bet you." And he promptly took out Joe Cole in the first half, and then Cole was replaced by James Maddison in the second half. And I think, he actually took him out as well, and that was it. Two yellows and a red. Off you go, Sunshine. But he's kept his nose clean, hasn't he, this season so far?
Only one booking in the opening seven or eight games.
Which is amazing, isn't it? Yeah. So you think he's turned over a new leaf?
Well, I don't know.
Not so much the pit bull, more of the chihuahua that he was when he was in the Sky Blues.
Exactly.
Because he came with this reputation, didn't he, from when he joined the Sky Blues. His nickname was the pit bull. And, you know,
you didn't really see it.
You really didn't, did you? No. Sort of think, well, where's this sort of nasty midfield...
But then he's gone on to Shrewsbury and Southend, and I think he's chalked up something like 27 bookings and two red cards across two seasons for them.
Yeah.
So he's got the fire back in his belly, and
yeah,
maybe that'll be the case again when he's faces up against Michael Doyle.
Yes, because you know, he can mix it up, doesn't he? He likes to mix it up a little bit, you know. With a bit of afters, so it'll be interesting. And you know, whether Deegan reacts because it's Coventry, because I'm sure the fans will give him a bit of stick, and whether he'll react to that, and that might provoke something silly. That'll be interesting. But okay. Now, our final subject of the broadcast is some news about a departure. Young Charlie McCann, who we don't really know a great deal about. He's a 15-year-old Sky Blues Academy kid. He's a Coventry kid, been with the club since the age of seven, come up through the academy, and he's joined Manchester United, the club that he supported as a boy. Now, Charlie only sort of came to our attention really in the summer when he was called up for England under-16s, played a couple of games for them. And I guess, you know, when you've got a player that's as talented as we're told he is, I guess it's inevitable, isn't it, that they're going to end up going.
Come in for him and pick him up.
Yeah.
But, like, we haven't heard much of him, and I still didn't know a lot about him until, well, yesterday when transfer was announced. But at that age, it's hard to stand in front of a kid that wants to... an academy of that size, because who knows where his career could end up now. And it's going to give him the platform to... really go on and make himself a top player. So, and we got a fee from, I believe.
I presume that will be sort of a loaded deal. You know, where City will probably get money
depending on
his first appearance for the first team, that sort of stuff, and a number of appearances. You would like to think that the deal would be sort of loaded in that sort of way, really, so that Coventry continue to get rewards as his career develops and hopefully flourishes, you know. But, you know, I mean, it's a success story for the lad, you know, and a dream come true, you know, because it's the team that he supports as well. But I still think, you know, that it is a real shame. And, you know, I've often said that there should be a rule that homegrown kids... should have to play at least 50 games for their club before being allowed to either be sold or leave. I just think that, you know, it's just such a shame that, you know, he's been here since the age of seven. You know, Coventry have developed him, coached him, you know, brought him through and helped him become the player that he is, you know, the talent that he is. Alright, there's natural talent clearly there. Anyway, but Coventry sort of nurtured that talent, and yet they get nothing back apart from, you know, financial reward, and it's just, you know, you just wish, you know, that you could have seen more of the talent on the pitch before he's gone, you know. And I guess the danger is that, you know, while it is a great opportunity for him to go to Old Trafford, the danger is that because these big clubs take such a scattergun approach, you know, they're mopping up kids from throughout the country and all over the world, really. You know, all over Europe. You know, they've got scouts looking at kids and stuff like that. But the danger is that he gets sort of swallowed up in that and lost, really. And you know, but let's hope that he can sort of stand out and shine and make his way through. It's interesting. I spoke to one of his coaches from when he was 7 and 8 year old, because he played briefly. He played for Sphinx, I think, before he joined the Scarborough's Academy, and he also played for Brinklow, junior football club. And I spoke to his coach from the time, a chap called Wayne Pulford, and I asked him. So, you know, firstly, did he think he got what he, you know, did he think at that tender age that he'd go all the way? And the other thing is, you know, what sort of stood out about him at that age? And he said, you know, it was that sort of gritty determination, because he's a midfielder, and he said when he played in the seven-a-side team, he played sort of wide right, but he just had that sort of that hunger and heart and determination, that sort of real will to win, you know, that was a step above everybody else on the pitch, you know. So,
and I think that's what matters most for kids nowadays, is you can have all the talent in the world, but you've got to want it as well. And see so many kids that are blessed with skills and good ability, but don't have that desire to go to the next level or fight to be in the first team. But if he's got that, then who knows where he could end up.
Yeah, well, let's hope it is. I mean, you know, you did a piece yesterday about other youngsters from the academy or academy homegrown talents that got away, but one that sort of sticks out for me really in more recent years is Basala Sambu, who obviously moved to Everton, but you know you can't help think, I know he's doing really well there in the 23s, but you can't help thinking that he might be a first team player here at Coventry.
He probably would be. I mean, Ponticelli's not far off, and you think Sambu, is he a year older or something like that?
Yeah.
So he probably would be one of our first-choice strikers. And for him as well, it's probably better to have men's football than under-23s football. Even though it'd be League 2, it's still going up against people of different ages rather than people of the same age group.
Mm.
And would probably help him develop a bit better before he goes on to the Evertons or any team bigger than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, thank you, George. That brings us to the end of this latest edition of the Coventry Telegraph podcast, While We Sing Together. Hopefully we'll catch you next week. Mantej Mann will be back with me next week in the hot seat, and we'll speak to you then. So thanks, George.
No problem.